Welcome to the Wellbeing Rebellion, the podcast that's changing workplace cultures for good. We're your hosts, Ngazi Weller
and Obehi Alafoje.
Let's get this rebellion started. Rebels, we have another exciting episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion for you. Today, I am thrilled to have a very special guest with me. Joining us today is none other than Dr. Ram Raghavan, a three-time author and a seasoned expert with over 30 years of experience in the field. Ram has dedicated his career to helping over 100 organizations unlock the power of data. Yes, I said it, data, to understand employee and customer sentiments, ultimately empowering leaders to drive performance improvements. And who doesn't want that? So if you've ever wondered just how you're supposed to go about measuring how happy your employees actually are, or if you've been wondering why your engagement scores seem high but your productivity is remaining fairly static, then this is the episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion that you do not want to miss. Ram, thank you so much for joining us on the Wellbeing Rebellion. It's good to have you here.
Good to be here. Being a rebel is my middle name, so thanks for having me.
Is it? It's funny. Rebel's my middle name too. Yeah. And before we started recording, I'll have to be honest, Ram said that my... at this time, stroppy teenage daughter's middle name was Defiance. And I said, yes, it definitely is. And her other middle name is Attitude. So there's a lot of that going around in this house today, isn't there?
In any house.
In yeah. Any house. Yes, definitely ones occupied by neurodivergent teenagers, that's for sure. So, Ram, you have such a lot of knowledge and expertise that you have acquired through your diligent study and hard work. I'm saying all of this because the conversation we had beforehand revealed to me the extent to which you work to better yourself, to grow your business. I'm just so impressed, and I wonder if it'll come up. But you have amassed such a lot of information about this whole topic of how you measure well-being, or as I like to call it, glibly, quantifying happiness, right? So Kaya was established, was it 2021?
Yeah.
Okay. And it is the UK's first digital well-being solution. So can you tell us about Kaya and what made you go into this area and the impact that it's had in the last 3 years since it's launched?
I mean, if I'm going to talk about Kaya, I need to give a bit of background about the origins of Kaya. So it actually came out of my PhD thesis. That is that happened in 2003 to 2005. So my thesis was about understanding how you value people consciously and subconsciously. It was sponsored by Centrica, the guys who charge an arm and a leg for your gas and electricity. They're the ones who actually sponsored it. So the good thing is, the research that I did with them helped me to move things forward. And I then, post-PhD, I worked with a lot of companies, with a few consultant neurologists and psychologists, to come up with 26 different solutions. And I started offering this as a consultancy solution to various organizations, like the likes of Hilton, Volvo, you know, EDF Energy, and so on and so forth. So I've been actually using this as a metric to collect data as to how people feel about their teams, their manager, the relationship they have with the managers, the teams, and the organization, and use that data to show how it is impacting them personally, and then how it is impacting them from a performance point of view, and what is getting impacted. Because companies always want to understand, I'm spending money on people, which I know is the right thing to do, but what's the benefit I'm getting? So that's how I was using the solution. Now, this happened till 2019, where I was, you know, doing this as a consultancy solution. Then we all know what happened in 2020, and I was an early adopter, so I got COVID. Being an early adopter, I didn't have access to the vaccinations or whatever. So I mean, to cut a long story short, took me almost 2 years to recover. And then I realized that I can't be doing consultancy the way I used to do. A, because mind fog is there. I mean, I'll give you a typical example. I was with one client the other day. I was talking to the client and I forgot the client's name. It's that bad. So in a consultancy scenario, that doesn't work. So that motivated me to then think of what can I do with the knowledge, expertise, and the data that I have. And being a techie, you know, that was my first thing. I said, let's bring all this together to create a tech platform. So that's where Kaya took its shape. So what I did was, having worked with all these big organizations, I built the platform with a view of, you know, solving the problem at a macro level. But then I realized, you know what? That's not going to be the way SMEs want to use it. Because I was told by an SME, not that I was clever or anything. When I put it in front of an SME, they said, no, this is not working. So I refined it and then made it as a solution that actually helps SMEs do something with the data. So that's been my journey. And what made me do all this? I've always been curious about people. And I always believe that the world, anything that you do, whatever people call it intangible, can still be quantified. And I'm always keen to find ways to measure it. So I took it up as a personal challenge to measure something which people call it as goodwill and put some random number. I wanted to put a number to it scientifically and link it back to how people are feeling, how it's impacting them, impacting performance. So that's what it is. And the journey has not been easy. It's A, I was recovering, that's one. B, people talk about well-being and market for well-being has actually gone mad, isn't it? I mean, you are in the same space.
Yeah.
So for every great solutions provider, you have a quack or three quacks operating. And I said, when I said quack, I spoke to someone, he said, I haven't heard the term in a long time now. My dad used to say quacks. That's actually become challenging and companies are actually spending money without realizing where their impact is, what is the impact. So convincing companies is the first thing. So now I'm in the phase where I'm trying to get companies to understand that this is important. Yes, this is important, but it's important to invest in the right initiatives with the right people, because that is where it actually matters. Tomorrow I can say, you know what, my cat died or my goldfish died. So I understand death and pain and I can't become a bereavement counselor.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah. People have done that.
Mm.
And I read somewhere it was £19 billion or something is the damage these people are actually causing to the economy because of poor well-being initiatives that they are providing to employees. So I'm trying to help companies understand the importance of stopping before spending. I want them to pause, reflect. Is this the right thing to do? Is it what my employees want? And what is it actually going to improve? Who's going to get the benefit as a result? I'm asking these key but uncomfortable questions. Sometimes, you know, you get brushed off. Oh, we are doing everything right. But some, you know, people-centric, genuinely organizations that care, leaders that care, pause and then they started taking sight or stock of what they're doing at the moment, which is the first victory that I'm trying to get to. So that's where we are. There are various things that have come out, but we'll talk about it later. I know your question was short, but my own answer was not. So you would have figured out that I love to talk.
I love people who love to talk. It makes my job a lot easier. There's two things I want to know. First of all, so what exactly does Kaya do and how does it work? But then there is the piece that you were just talking about now, which is of great relevance to me as a well-being practitioner and entrepreneur, about how the impact of the explosion in discussion about mental health and well-being has led to quacks or charlatans. And I'm not trying to say that everyone's quacks or charlatans, but we all know there are good service providers excellent service providers and, frankly, mediocre service providers. And it's become extremely difficult for the procurement team, whether that's HR or L&D or whoever, to understand clearly the distinction between them. So then you tarnish everything with a brush and you say, well, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So we're not going to invest in anything. And that is definitely not the right answer. So that's a challenge for everybody who's in this space, is being able to prove that the solution that you provide is effective, and making sure that you're selling the right thing to the right people at the right time. That's one thing that I was thinking of, because I remember when we discussed before, you said that in that work that you do with the senior leaders to get them to recognize that, you use a game.
Yep. Yeah.
What is that game? That was such an interesting sales technique.
So let me start off by answering your first question, which is, what is Kaya? Kaya basically is a measure. It measures and gives a number for an individual, which is then aggregated to create a team number, a department number, and a company number. This talks about this basically. It tells you how does the individual feel, or what does the company feel about the managers, the team relationships, and the culture that exists. Because you could be providing all the benefits to support employees outside work, but if you treat them like doormats, it's not going to work. So this number tells you that. And we've got sector-specific data, so companies can then start comparing sector-specific information as to where they stand. It also then tells companies what are the challenges that employees face. Like, for example, they struggle to sleep, they can't focus, they're making, you know, they feel like an imposter, things like that. Then it also then quantifies and says, what are the challenges that comes as a result of that from a performance perspective? Like customer complaints have gone up, you know, people are making a lot of mistakes, they take a lot of time to complete things, and so on and so forth. This consolidated view of what is happening within the organization because of poor well-being culture can then help companies understand what they need to do, where they need to focus on. And the system captures all the insights with a view to actually saying, these are some of the things that employees are saying, so you can stop doing it or find ways to address that. So that is one thing. The second thing that the platform does, or Kaya does, is to show companies what are the things that are bugging employees outside work. Like it talks about, what is your financial well-being and what is the support you're getting or you think you're getting from the company? So we cover six areas. So people are worried about money, about their health, about their mental health, about the relationships, what they are contributing to society. And finally, we also worry about work outside work. So it provides a consolidated view of things that are bugging people outside work. And then that data can be used by companies to then say, oh, we thought our company employees wanted gym memberships. Only 20% want that. So they can then start spending money on initiatives that matter. Then it allows companies to spend their money much more prudently to address and solve various issues that are there. So that's one part of the problem. The second part is, employees talk about various things, but they don't want to access the support if it is a sensitive area, like counseling or financial advice. I don't want to be going and asking my manager, can I have this support? A, because I don't trust, that comes up in the number. B, what if it is used and I am actually asked to work longer hours, or I'm asked to do things which I'm not comfortable because the manager knows that I need this job, kind of. So, and stats have shown that money that is invested in sensitive well-being areas, only a third gets used, which means there's an opportunity for that issue to be addressed. The platform provides all this anonymous support using the data that the company provides and the support they provide to employees straight away, bypassing anyone in between. So that addresses the problem of trust on anonymity straight away. So as a result, companies can say, this is our number, this is what we are doing, This is where we have invested. This is the support we have given. And if we do this, these are the things that are going to improve from a performance and productivity perspective. For an employee, if you're a manager, you have to do something about the culture. But as an employee, all you do is basically take the support that is provided and it empowers them to act on it. So that's what Kaya does. The second bit which you talked about was the game bit, right? What we do is basically, for a bigger organization, you've seen that. They have a team of people. You have HR, you've got ops, L&D, learning and development, you know, training, so many things. So if you come up with an initiative, there's an army of people ready to execute it, purely from the HR space. So they know what they're doing, so they go and do it. But for a smaller organization, that's a challenge. You don't have, you know, a big team. So A, they don't have a big team. B, they don't have the time to actually think about it. Like, how come bigger organizations think about well-being? So we bought a board game where, you know, you actually helps companies play the board game. It looks at a couple of things, elements like employees and customers and your strategy and things like that. And it helps, it's played by employees, the leaders, the senior leadership team. It varies depending on the size of the organization. And when they play the game, we look at it from three different perspectives. What is it now? What is the well-being strategy now? Because you're spending a lot of money. Is it actually working? So you can't answer any of these questions. So it's a mess. So we get people to place certain coins on a board to really show that it is chaos. If it is chaos, if it is not very well thought out or articulated, that comes out very, very clearly there. What happens there is then it actually helps individuals say what they want to say and depersonalize it. So when I actually have a discussion with people and I say, oh, the operations director is not a brilliant thing because the processes are rubbish, the ops director or the team takes offense to it. By depersonalizing it on a board game and saying that is it, I'm taking the ego out of the equation. Then we get them to explain it, and then we then get them to go through the next iteration where we say, if you've got the car keys, how will you change it? What are the things you would start focusing on when it comes to well-being? So what happens is when you are empowered, that is my I perspective. I will do this. I will do this. And generally, unless you're a psychopath, you wake up and want to go to work and do a good job. You don't brush your teeth saying, you know what, I want to make Ram's life miserable today. And he goes, his life miserable when I walk through the door. So when you get them to say, what is it that you will do? The I perspective starts bringing a lot of synergy. Because then you start realizing, oh, we are all not different. We have got a lot of things in common. Then we use the third bit, which is basically a bigger board game, where they actually say, how can we all come together to create an approach which will work? So then we bring all the activities together. So at the end of the day, they will know what is the strategy that they are going to be pursuing, what are the areas they're going to be pursuing, what is the strength, what is the weakness. And if I've got 8 people in the room playing the game, we come up with 8 initiatives. And everyone takes charge of one, but they will also have to support another person. So it kind of mentoring someone else and at the same time being responsible for something. It creates a positive culture. And then you start rolling it out within the organization and things start happening because now you know what to do. And it's a fun-filled game rather than, you know, normally when you talk of a team day, it's always let's do some team building activities like let's go and climb some rocks or go do some abseiling or go for a good meal.
Yeah.
Get drunk, go back.
Yeah, that's it.
Right?
That's it.
This is a different one. People feel exhausted. It drains them intellectually, but they feel good about it because they are creating something. It's their baby. It's the conception of a well-being strategy and an approach. That changes the whole
process. It's giving them an opportunity in a novel way to work on the business, not in the business. And that's something that most people don't have the opportunity to do. We're so task focused.
Exactly. And SMEs, you're always firefighting. One,
always. When you do multitask.
So when you step out and start thinking about the business, work on the business, like how you said, start seeing, you know, the wood to the trees. Till you're, when you're doing it, you can't see things. So it's all, everything is massive undergrowth or overgrowth or whatever. So you're just plowing through the day. That's not what you want if you want to change how people feel about the organization. So that's what the board game does. It takes them away, gets them to look at the big picture. And then once they do that, we then come up with Kaya to measure and show what is really happening, where the, you know, the issues are, and then they can start addressing those issues. So that's what it does.
So when we talk about quantifying happiness, I always refer to that Peter Drucker quote, if you can't measure it, then you can't improve it. And that's why it is so important that organizations properly look at some metrics, some method that is as effective as possible to find out actually how people are feeling, doing, where they're struggling, where the need is. And I find that few companies are doing it well. What we tend to do is run an employee engagement survey annually. And that's as far as it goes with measuring any of the softer side of what it means to work at our organization. And we base our entire L&D strategy, our entire employee support strategy on that one annual survey, for better or for worse. That's why I love Kaya, because it's much more comprehensive, targeted, yet easy for the employee to complete and for management to analyze method of finding out how people are feeling and where the need is, so that you can do that sage investment on support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, I mean, engagement is definitely needed. So if you really look at it, I mean, I'm going to use the iceberg analogy, where you see performance, you see that's visible, right? And then the performance is primarily influenced by the behavior of people. If you look at what culture is, it's the combined behavior of a group of people in the department or the company, right? The behaviors are influenced by what I think, which is where engagement kicks in. If I think this is a good organization, then I decide to engage, which means the behaviors that I demonstrate as a result is going to be positive. If I think that this is not the place I want to be, I decide to disengage, which means my behaviors will reflect my engagement level. So, and you cannot see what you're thinking, because that's below the surface. So you go a bit deeper. So it's a good thing to have. But then what is happening is, it is Daniel Kahneman's book where he talks of system one and system two thinking, right? The conscious and the subconscious. So when you think, you are conscious about what you're thinking, right? But you go, what you think is influenced by how you feel at a deeper level, right? If you feel that you're not valued, you're not respected, you can't trust the organization, then you start thinking, is this the right place? That then reflects on the behaviors, engagement, and performance. So that is where feeling really matters. Kaya starts touching that. So engagement is needed, but why are people not engaged? Because we have a lot of data which says in UK has got the lowest engagement when it comes to Europe and all that. It's not like companies are not doing the right thing, but you'll have to go a bit deeper. And Kaya helps you go one, and there is another level which I don't want to, probably I'll say it, I shouldn't be saying it, but I'll say it. You've got the conscious, subconscious, and the preconscious. Preconscious is at a deeper level. You don't even know that it exists. Like it's your fight or flight thing. So Kaya looks at the subconscious and the preconscious aspects of it. We measure it and then we put a number. So it is, you're trying to dive a bit deeper to understand, why are people feeling this way? What can you do to change that? So that is the thing. So we always, when we talk to organizations, we say, use Kaya once in 4 months, collect the data, do something about it, measure your engagement annually, and have a big party because your data would have improved. Because you have understood what people are feeling and you're doing the right thing. So then when you measure what they're thinking as a result of what you've done, performance goes up, engagement goes up. And we have seen that umpteen number of times. So there's nothing wrong in measuring engagement, but you need to go a bit deeper. That's what we try to do. So hopefully it was not too heavy, right?
No, it really puts in perspective how this can work for an organization, because I could be sitting there thinking, well, we've already got an engagement survey and we're pretty happy with it. We've already got support in place and we're happy with that. So I don't think we need Kaya, but this is to say every organization should be looking at this deeper level to inform why their engagement scores are the way they are, which will then inform what kind of support they could get to improve them. And who doesn't want better engagement scores?
Absolutely. And one of the things with engagement scores is when you complete the survey, it takes, depending on the company that you're working with, takes anywhere between 3 weeks to 3 months to come up with a report and the data. And how many of the employees who've given that feedback get to see what the data says? That is one. And if the data is good, yes, definitely things happen. You get to see things. Some initiatives are rolled out. But that's, the horse is already bolted, right? You've lost 3, 4, 5 months before you start doing something. Or even 2 months before you start doing something. But when people start collecting data using Kaya, when an employee says, these are my challenges, and this is what I would need support for, system automatically signposts them to the relevant support. The day, at that same time, they complete the survey. So you don't have to wait for 3 months to get something personally. So it demonstrates that the company is much more committed to helping me and empower me understand my challenges and do something about it. And we don't run the survey for more than 2, max is 3 weeks. And by the time the survey is complete, the day it closes, let's say it closes at 12 o'clock midnight, 12 minutes, 0.1 millisecond, you log into the platform, the reports are there available for you. It's all automated. Everything is done. So what it allows is max is 2, 3 weeks. Within 3 weeks, the company can then start doing something about it to address what they can change from a cultural point of view, to bring in a culture that cares. So that's the speed is of the essence. And that's what we focus on.
And in rolling out Kaya, because it is live in some organizations at present, right?
Yep.
What are you noticing, if you're privy to it, what kind of challenges are people experiencing at the moment when it comes to well-being?
One of the things that we are seeing is some of the traditional perceived challenges when it comes to financial well-being and when it comes to mental well-being, the support that the company is providing, A, has been provided for the wrong things, or B, is not having the right impact. So that is something that we are seeing, especially in those two areas. And then what we're also seeing is people don't really understand how to bring, when you're trying to bring a culture of people of different nationalities, different perspectives, different motivations, how do you make them inclusive? How do you bring them together? That's something that people are struggling. To be absolutely clear, we don't provide any solutions, and we actually show that these are the challenges that an organization has, and they work with people like someone who was actually talking about challenges, you know, neurodiversity. I don't even understand what people are talking about, because it had come up as one thing that employees were keen to know more about. Managers were keen to know more about. No one knows. So things, because this is a state of flux always, isn't it? It's always evolving. Companies are trying to play catch up with some of, in some cases. So the data is actually showing that yes, you're doing the right thing or you're not doing the right thing, which comes as a shock. And then the second thing is requirements of what support is needed is also changing. And that's something that I'm seeing mainly across some SMEs and not as much in bigger organizations, because bigger organizations, as I mentioned earlier, they have a huge team, so they can tap into anyone that they want to and then get that relevant person on board straight away. But that's where the challenge kicks in for an SME. So to address that, one of the things that we built and we launched is a marketplace for all well-being solutions providers. Like, you know, would love to have you on the platform.
Like Aurora. Yeah, yes.
Exactly. So you can, because my view of the world is I have built something which basically helps companies understand what good looks like. How do you get there? You need the support of coaches, solutions providers, and they could either be accessed through the platform or there, if they're already working with them, the data can be shared to them and they can address that. So that is where the whole thing is. So to answer your question, it's A, companies are trying to play catch up. And another thing I'm actually seeing, this is a new thing, is some organizations are saying, everything is well-being now, isn't it? So there's a well-being fatigue that is kicking in. And it's, which goes back to the conversation we had about a lot of people, you know, who have come in without proper qualifications and training and offering solution. And maybe it's also the reason why awareness has gone up, maybe, and that's why people are thinking, in what I should be asking this or not. So that's also the thing. But I'm seeing that well-being fatigue also setting in quite a few organizations.
I do see that. Then going back to some of the specific challenges that employees are grappling with, that you mentioned, you talk about financial well-being, mental well-being, and then when it comes to the team dynamics or interrelationships between employees, this multiculturalism and inclusion of everybody, those are the big kind of challenges. Could you shed a bit more light or provide a bit more insight into the specifics of any of those three aspects?
One of the things is basically people are worried about money at this point in time, right? I mean, the economy is not great. So you cannot leave your worries about life and then really start doing things that the company wants. So that is there, but there is also a tension as to how that is actually going to help them overcome, because companies are increasing the salaries and wages and what have you. But in realistic terms, the cost of living is actually much more higher than that, right? So that is basically causing a lot of stress, and people are taking time off work. They're trying to do multiple jobs. So that's actually causing a lot of stress within the ecosystem, because they don't know and they are always feeling tired. And as I see it, if this is not addressed, there's going to be massive burnout instances in the organizations, because people are stretching and stretching and stretching. I mean, there's one thing that, you know, if you love what you do, then you don't mind doing what you're doing. Here, it's more of a necessity that I'm doing things, so you're not enjoying. So that's actually adding a lot of pressure to me. And then there are micro stressors within the organization that are there. People don't realize that they are edging towards burnout. Small things that are there, like, for example, working from home was seen as a comfortable thing. Now, if you want them to come into the office, yes, it builds the culture, it builds all the right things. I don't deny that. But then for an employee, that's upsetting their already established ecosystem. And that's challenging. Plus, coming into, if you are living outside London or even within London or any city, commuting adds more expenses to your, you know. So that is something that I'm seeing. The other bit is basically, you know, you have people who are actually much more willing to say that they are neurodivergent, right? It's your area. So then when that happens, how do you deal with neurodivergent people? Now that I've got the awareness, people have got the awareness, how do I deal with that? That's the other challenge. How do you ensure that you provide the right kind of climate, right kind of culture to ensure that they deliver given their circumstances, but then with a view of balancing that with what the business requires? That's a challenging perspective again. I see that happening. That's the other thing. And then when it comes to customers, I was talking to someone and they said the word entitled is being thrown out quite a bit these days. I hear about entitlement a lot these days. And people who've got the money feel that they are entitled species who deserve the very best of everything. What they forget is they're also another customer to another organization or to the organization, right? So their expectations are unrealistic and employees are expected to match that unrealistic expectations. And that's causing stress. Like working with the Institute of Sales Professionals, where you're looking at the mental health challenges of salespeople. Their mental health challenge is significant compared to someone who does a desk job, in an office, providing a support function. Because they are always under the pressure. It's always highs and lows, isn't it? Today's win is tomorrow's history. So your endorphin levels and your hormones go surge. It's like literally a roller coaster. They're worried about all this, targets. And they can't, obviously, they have the deadlines and the customer doesn't want to meet them. The time pressure kicks in. So that's another major profession I'm seeing that it's getting to boiling point. And a lot of organizations they're treating salespeople like a disposable asset. But they are the guys who actually bring in the money also, right, to the organization to survive. So that mindset is not happening. And again, I don't know if you've noticed it, when you talk of people, when you talk of well-being, the moment you say that, everyone looks at the HR director or the well-being person, rather than look at the mirror and say, that's my responsibility because these are my people. Good leaders do that. But if we had all good leaders, then the world would be a better place, right? You don't believe, So.
Absolutely. But I do think that tools like Kaya can help the people who are tasked with it, i.e. HR, CPOs, whatever, well-being leads, as you say, head of DEIB. It can task them, or it can equip them with the knowledge and understanding that allows them to figure out how to empower every manager and every employee to take ownership and responsibility for well-being. I really do think that knowledge is power in that sense. And you don't have that knowledge if you're not quantifying happiness. So this is why I think every organization who truly wants to improve the productivity of their employees and their workforce, whilst not compromising on their workers' well-being, has to have something like this to allow them to respond in an agile way, an effective way, to the needs as they are. I just think it's a brilliant, brilliant application program solution for making well-being work for businesses. And I think it does a lot to counter this thing that we have where we've got, as you said, well-being fatigue, because we've invested and it's made no difference. How many mental health awareness weeks have we done? It's made no difference. People are still miserable.
So that's why my role now is to get companies to stop investing in all this. Pause. Have a view of what you want to achieve. In the business, you can't just spray and pray. How do you expect that to happen with a well-being? Have a well-being strategy in place. Clearly have set targets in place. Approach it with clear strategy and tactics to address it. Measure it. Do something about it. Keep going. That is how I see it. And that's challenging because you're so, this is this. Now it's more like a tick box exercise, isn't it? Earlier, it used to be a window dressing exercise. Now it becomes a tick box exercise.
Absolutely. That is definitely what's happened with mental health and well-being. It's definitely what's happening with DEI. I've got a new expression for tick boxing. I call it shit boxing now because it's shit boxing. It's a load of horse poop where we know, because you know it's not going to work. You know you can't solve well-being with a webinar.
No.
You know that.
Exactly. See, if you really look at it, I wrote my PhD thesis in 2005, and I said, if employees are our asset, we need to actually value them. If you buy a new car, a new bike, or new appliance, you service it regularly, you provide all the things, what do we do with employees? Throw some training at them, and then expect them to dive into the deep end and do things. How are you nurturing them? There's no nurturing that happens. So I call employees are not an asset to the organization. In many organizations, they are an ass at the organization. That is how I see it. This is a controversial show, so I can say that.
Yes, you can.
So that is how I see it. See, when it comes to cutting, when business is not doing well, what's the first thing that gets cut? Training budgets. What's the second thing that gets cut? People. Then what happens at the end of the year? The CEO or the senior management team pat themselves at the back and give a big fat bonus for doing all of this. Existing employees who are there are working under a culture of fear because they don't want their heads to roll next. Because it's livelihoods. People don't see it as livelihoods. They're just seen as numbers. When that changes, then things change. So one of the things we try to do is basically I've launched something which calculates the opportunity cost of not treating your people right. Because I wanted to, rather than me convincing that you need to do the good thing, I'm showing them in number terms now. Pound, dollar sign. That's how much money you're leaving on the table or could go wrong if you don't address that. That's now getting some traction. So hopefully people will start equating this and start doing the right thing. Ultimately, it's about helping people become the best version of themselves, right? If you enjoy what you do and you become the best of what you can, why will there be a performance issue? Why will there be a productivity issue? All you need to do as a leader is to ensure that happens without fail, through your managers and through your army of people. That's it.
I think that's the perfect way to end this interview, is just allowing people to do the very best that they can every day and using the data that's available in our organizations to do that and inform that. I think that's brilliant. So if people want to get in touch and find out whether Kaya will work for their organization, how can they do that? Can we drop some information in the show notes?
We've been talking about Kaya. It is probably sounds too theoretical. So, you'll be able to see a link which you can access at the end of this webinar, or you'll be emailed that link if you want to try the survey for free. Please try it. You'll see that you will get an instant report based on the scenario that you are facing currently. You want to try the platform? Please get in touch with us, and that email will also be shared. And if you're just curious as to find out how much money is actually wasted in your organization or could potentially be saved in your organization, that'll be another link that will be provided. So
yes, amazing. I'm encouraging all the rebels who are in positions of leadership relating to mental health, well-being, strategy, development in an organization to get in touch with Ram, because it could help. It will help. And it's time that we take this mental health crisis that we're facing seriously, not just for the good of the individuals who work for us, but for the good of the company overall. That's your job. And Ram's going to help you do it. Thank you so much, Ram, for being a fellow Wellbeing Rebel and joining us on the Wellbeing Rebellion podcast. It's been a pleasure speaking with you as always.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion.
If you liked what you just heard, please share it with your colleagues, follow us on LinkedIn. The link will be in the show notes, and generally show us some love.
We want to build a whole army of fellow rebels who want to create positive workplaces for everyone. Will you join the rebellion? See you next time.